Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. David Granite, and welcome to Health Matters. There's the old phrase that parents have to talk to their kids about the birds and the bees, but that's not an easy task. We have with us an expert on this topic, pediatrician Dr. Crystal DeFreitas, who's with us. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I started with the talking to our kids about the birds and the bees, and I have to look right at it. Talking about the birds and the bees with ease.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
I think there are parents out there going, really?
Is that possible?
Is that possible?
Yes, you know, it is. Yes, it is.
I want to just emphasize how important this is by highlighting a couple of statistics, if I can. The RAND study that showed that more exposure to sex on TV doubles the rate of sexual intercourse as the kids get into high school, and that 6% of high school kids are now having intercourse, and 1 in 4 of them have sexually transmitted disease. And then if you ask them, they regret having had intercourse.
Of course.
Why is there such a lack of information in these kids' hands?
But, you know, if you look at it from the perspective of the parents, how many of us parents received disinformation when we were growing up? There's no education that's provided there for the parents so that the parents can then go on and teach their children. Many of the parents will leave it to the schools and not do anything at all because they're just not sure what to say, how to say it. Do I overwhelm my child? How much information is enough? What is age appropriate? We need to educate the parents.
Well, you know, as a pediatrician, you know that parents don't do anything to become a parent other than make a child. There's no, I mean, you have to take a course to cut hair. You have to take a course to do nails.
To drive a car.
You have to get certified. But to have a kid?
But to kid, nothing. And there's so much information. We actually have really, really good information available as to what our children can understand at what age. What is age appropriate? What will not overwhelm them? What is it that they really need to know at the different ages as they continue to grow?
Well, and I really want to get into that, but before we do, currently, kids get as much information from television as they do from their parents? Is that really true?
Isn't that amazing?
Oh, it's astounding.
It's amazing. And they also get information from their peers who get it, again, in the playground, from TV. It's really very distressing.
I remember as a kid the whispers on the playground being so wrong.
Exactly.
And yet that's still going on all these years later. We ought to be able to do better than that, shouldn't we?
We should.
I talked to you about this before the show started. I recently did a topic on this show. We talked about adults who have sexuality issues, and one of the biggest problems they have is being able to talk about it. Well, if adults can't talk about their own sexuality, how do we get them comfortable talking to their children?
Imagine that. It's not an easy task at all. I think many of the parents, what I tell the parents to do is to start out by having somewhat of a mission statement. For example, what is the message that I want to give my kids about sexuality? What do I want to convey? What are my family values? What are my principles? How does this fit into the bigger picture of their lives?
So in the end, the decisions that a child makes with their own sexuality is influenced by the parents?
Of course. It's influenced by the parents, by their example. Oh, my goodness. The parents' example is the best that they can have to be able to give to their children with regards of how to behave. And parents don't realize that children are watching us all the time, and our example is their utmost educational piece.
Now, is there some concern that if we start talking to, between the ages of 4 and 9, let's say, we start talking to those kids, that we're going to create kids becoming promiscuous?
Well, that is the misconception. That is the biggest myth that we have in this type of information, that if we tell them early, they're going to go out and experiment, they're going to go tell the neighborhood kid, and that has not been shown to be the case. Moreover, when I talk to the families, you obviously have to teach your child how to differentiate what is private and what is secret. And the fact that this information is private information. We don't want you talking to the whole neighborhood. It's private. That's a parent's job. It's not your job. And then you also give them some guidelines as to how to respond when other children try to start that topic or try to ask you about that topic. You can just tell your kid to tell the other kid, you know, that's private. You should go ask your parent.
I really like that private versus secret. because they have completely different connotations.
Right, right. And if I may add, one of the ways that we, this is a wonderful time also to talk to the children about privacy and having their bodies be in private. And you can put that all together in keeping them safe and keeping them healthy. And a very easy, concrete way to help families get that message across is to tell their children your private body parts are those parts of your body that are covered by your bathing suit. And nobody should touch you, and you should not touch anybody in those private body parts, except, of course, mommy, daddy, the doctor,
right,
and those exceptions.
And are we giving kids information that's going to make them feel embarrassed about those private parts? Are they going to say, this is something that I, when I become an adult, I can't let my spouse touch? I mean,
no.
Are we setting them up for a problem?
No, quite the contrary. Children who know and understand their bodies and the way their bodies work have been shown to be a lot more comfortable. And what we're doing is we're bringing that back to the home. If we start talking to the children at an early age, it's so much easier for the parent to later on continue that conversation. It's much easier to talk to a 5-6-year-old about their bodies than it is to talk to that awkward 14-year-old
sure.
about puberty.
Well, okay, so let's do it. You have the birds and the bees with ease, right? I mean, which is just a great phrase.
Thank you.
I would love that. So let's help the parents watching
okay.
to do that. Let me give you some questions,
right.
and you help us with the kinds of things that parents can talk about. Where do babies come from?
Okay. Take a deep breath.
Yeah, I have three kids. Where do babies come from? Gulp, you know?
I always tell the parents, take a big breath. And one of the things that I have them do is go back to their child and say, you know, that is a great question, David. What do you think?
Well, the stork brings them.
Oh, your stork? Oh, how did you figure that out?
Tommy told me on the playground.
Oh, I see. Well, you know, that's a great question, but it wasn't a stork. Do you really want to know where babies come from?
Of course.
Well, let me tell you, this is a great story. Babies come from a very special place inside the mother's body called the uterus. And another word for the uterus is womb. I like the word womb because it rhymes with the word room. It's a room inside a woman's body that's there just so that she has a place for her baby to grow. Isn't that amazing?
So then the next question is, how do they get out, Mommy?
Ah. That is just amazing. You want to hear the story of birth? Do you want to hear the most amazing thing that has happened to me when you came out of me? Let me tell you how this happens, because this is really fun. Before I go there, how long do you think it takes for the baby to grow inside a mother's body?
A couple of days, Mommy.
No, it takes 9 months, 9 long months. After 9 long months, by design, there's no more room left in the mother's body. So the baby has to leave the body. And the baby knows this, and the mom knows it. So the baby starts pushing, and the mom's body starts helping the baby push out. So they push and they push. And first of all, the pushes are soft and gentle. But as the hours go, the pushes get harder and harder, and it's a lot of work. That's why it's called being in labor. And then it pushes and pushes and pushes, and it comes out this little canal, and it stretches it, stretches it. It's called the birth canal. And then when it's open wide enough, out comes a baby through that special opening between the woman's legs called the vagina.
So I hear you in the discussion. There's no magical talk.
No.
There's no mysticism about it. You're not going into in-depth medical knowledge, but you're being very clear mm-hmm. and using proper words
mm-hmm.
and making sure there's no misunderstandings.
Right. And it's a wonderful story. In fact, you can make it the story so fascinating. You can say, oh, my goodness. And when this baby comes out, you are connected to your mother through your belly button. So let me show you your belly button. And then we put a little clamp, we cut it, and you're ready to go. And you were connected to me through your belly button. And I was connected through Grandma through her belly button. And look at this, we're all connected to each other.
Wow, it's making the psychological connections concrete.
And it's a wonderful story of birth, of the way we all come into the world.
Okay, so what about the hard one, the difficult one? How did the baby get there in the first place?
Well, why don't we talk about that another time? just kidding. But that is the more difficult question. That is the question that most parents are uncomfortable about, that most parents take a big breath and want to know. And again, I'll give you a real quick, easy example of how to address that question. Now, you have to back up a little bit and realize that values and morals and principles all come into this conversation. So you'll hear some of mine. They're not right, they're not wrong, it's just mine. But I tell the children, it takes two things to make a baby. It's like putting this in the context of how children think and how children understand. They understand the concept of a puzzle because they do puzzles. So think about a baby as two pieces of a puzzle. One piece of the puzzle is the father's contribution. It's called the sperm. The other piece of the puzzle is the mother's contribution. It's called the egg, and it's already inside her body. And these two pieces have to come together inside a woman's body. And if everything is just right, a baby may start to grow. So when two adult people love each other, they have a different way of showing that love. It's called romantic love. They hug and they kiss and they touch each other in a very special way. When two adult responsible people love each other, they lie down together very close, in a private place, of course. And imagine, by design, our adult bodies were made to fit together. And the man's penis fits inside the woman's vagina. Well, this is happening. The sperm leaves the man's body, comes inside the woman's body, and if everything is just right, a baby may start to grow inside a woman's body. Isn't that amazing?
It's very clear.
When two adult people share their body in this very special way, this is called sex or sexual intercourse.
And you get a whole discussion. Very simple, very straightforward.
Yes. Many times the children take a breather at that point.
The parents take a breather.
I do too when I talk about this, because usually there's a lot of stunned faces in the audience as though that is not possible.
So I want to just break for a second.
Yes.
You said in the audience.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so this is the way you would describe it to a classroom or an auditorium full of kids?
That's correct.
Because you do this as a larger lecture.
I do, but I do it in the privacy of people's homes with mothers and daughters present.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to be 500 kids in an auditorium at a school?
No, that intimacy is lost, and there's a lot of giggling that happens after I talk about this. Sometimes the girls are stunned. Believe it or not, the mothers giggle as much as the girls do.
I do believe it.
The mothers.
But now you've taken the role of being the one who describes this, and as a trusted physician, I understand that. Mm-hmm. What about the parents' role?
Well, I tell the parents, use this as a model. This is not a one-time conversation. This is a conversation that has to be repeated and has to be added to that foundation of information that we've given our children, which includes our values, our principles, includes the correct names for their body parts, the information about birth, and then we add on the information about puberty and responsibility, and then we add on more values, and it's building upon a foundation.
Well, it almost seems to be an example of how we should be parenting.
Yes,
it's
right?
One topic, but the concept translates.
Yes, and just like we spend all these years learning math or science in school, learning about sexuality is not a one-time talk. We have to continue to learn about it. Even as an adults, we're always learning about the way our bodies
Now, I know work. You have the booklet, The Birds and the Bees with Ease. Do you have photographs and slideshows and stuff that the kids look at while you're talking to give them information about this?
When I do my seminars for my mothers and my daughters, I do have a slide presentation that goes with it. But it's very age-appropriate, and it's very properly done.
Okay, because I'm a boy,
yes.
I have to ask, who's talking to the boys?
Well, you know, this is what we need to get to. This is what lacks more than anything. We always feel as though the girls have a harder time through puberty because there's the menstruation. And boys do have a hard time through puberty too, but we don't have as much information or fathers coming up to speak with the boys. Mm. I have taught many boys at different groups that the mothers, but it's the mothers who gather the boys together and the fathers and say, come on, we have to do this. And then they drag me along and I do the presentation for the boys too. But it should be for both,
well,
obviously.
So we've been talking in a very concrete manner about how to talk to kids under the age of 9 or so.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've alluded to the puberty issues. And I think these kids are the ones who have started to see PG-13 movies.
Uh-huh.
And they slip a lot of stuff into those kinds of movies. And television, if you stay up after 8 o'clock at night, has references to sexuality and things going on all the time. The kids are interested. They're nervous. They're afraid of some things.
Exactly.
There's a whole host of emotions going through them as their bodies are changing at the same time. What are the kinds of things that parents can say to those kids? And one of the things I came across was telling a kid that it's not legal to have sexual relations with a child.
It's against the law.
Talk about that.
It's against the law. When we talk to the children about sex, they are pretty overwhelmed. The 9 and 10-year-old child is pretty overwhelmed. They cannot fathom that we actually do this. They said, well, so, Mom, you do that 3 times, you have 3 kids?
Right.
So that's good. I said, yes, that's right. But as they continue to grow, they're going to get more and more information. And I do tell them it is against the law to have sex. You know, that's the truth. We're not lying to
them. Does that give them relief?
Oh, my goodness. They just start giggling and they say, oh, well, you should have told me that. They don't realize it.
Okay.
But I think what we can do to really help the children is let them know that our culture, our media, uses the word sex over and over again. And let them understand that that is being done to grab their attention. And that is not right. That sex is a very special part of adult life with responsibility attached to it. I tell the parents, spend time with your child watching TV and debunk all those scenarios in which sex is glamorized, and make the child see when they call you, you're sexy. What does that really mean for the young girls? They use that word as though it's cute, and they may not be understanding the real meaning.
I see young girls dressing.
Exactly. I was going to get there.
They have shorts on that on the back say sexy.
I know. And I don't think they realize the connotation that that implies in our society. And it behooves us as parents to be the ones to alert them, to make sure that they realize this.
And their concerns about their body, what do you talk to them about when these changes begin, what they mean, what's going on with their own organs inside their body? How do we talk to kids about that?
I think we start out by saying how amazing this creation is. We have these amazing machines, these amazing creations called human bodies. And I tell the girls, this is the most amazing gift that your parents have given you, which is your body. And understanding the body is like a health class. And I try to put it all together into a nice story about all the changes that happen, the breast development, the body odor, the acne, menstruation, and the fact that boys go through all the same changes too. There is only one change that doesn't happen in boys that happens in girls, and only one thing that happens in girls that doesn't happen in boys. And they're all stunned by this. But again, realizing that this is a normal, very healthy part of growing up, and that we all go through it, that we're all here to support them.
Well, you have the My First Period kit and DVD, which is spectacular.
Thank you. Thank you, David.
And I'm the father of 3 sons.
I know.
So this is a conversation I'm not going to have. But I'm trying to think of what it must be like for a mom to talk. I assume it's going to be a mom most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Or even what about a single dad who has to talk to his daughter? I mean, what is the DVD? How does that help a family deal with this?
Okay, so the DVD has a seminar in which I am speaking to a group of moms. And it gives you all the information that the mothers need to have. It's also divided in sections. So if the mothers want to review how to talk about the birds and the bees, how to explain sexual intercourse, they can do that on their own and not have the child see that without their being present.
Okay.
And it's I have another portion of it in which I talk to other mothers, and they can see that most of us mothers are uncomfortable with this. It's a small minority of moms who take this and run with it. But as a general rule, we're uncomfortable. My voice trembled when I first spoke about this to my own daughters.
You seem so comfortable and at ease and so positive about all this as an experience. It's hard for me to believe it.
Oh, it was. I felt my voice tremble. I was out of breath. I said, Crystal, this is you. And imagine all these other mothers that are not in my position. I felt I was fortunate because I had my education. But it's a really wonderful thing. In fact, I'll share with you, David, when I do the seminars, at the end, all the mothers are so appreciative. I go home, talk to my husband, And he says, well, how did it go? And we can tell how well it goes based on how many unsolicited hugs I get at the end. Huh. The mothers come up to me and they hug me. Oh, Dr. DeFreitas, thank you for doing this.
It was a three-hugger or five-hugger.
Yes, exactly. And I tell the mothers, use the conversation as a door opener. So later on, once everybody has quieted down, let a couple of weeks go by, and then bring up the conversation again in the car. The car is the best way to talk about this because you don't have to make eye contact. They're over there. You're over here. You can say, you know, remember that talk we went to? Do you have any other thoughts? Do you have any other comments? Or have you thought about it? Because you'll be surprised how different what they remember and what I have spoken is. And that's why the mother's presence there to help tie those loose lines again and for them to realize that they can come to their mother, that the mother's, this starts at home.
So, okay, if you're a parent of a daughter, you don't wait for them to start getting menstruation before you talk about this.
No, please don't. No. Mm-hmm.
You have to talk about this before it happens. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, there's a lot of fear.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, all of a sudden bleeding takes place and other things.
Exactly.
So what are you telling this prepubescent girl about what's about to happen to her?
I usually start by explaining that this is a normal transition time. This is a time in which your body is going to change. This is normal. This is healthy. This is the way everything happens in life. And then I slowly point out through all the changes that happened. We can also give them a timeline. You're going to see this happen first. You're going to see this happen next. Then at this point, you may have your first period. And all the what ifs. What if it happens at school? What if it happens at a sleepover? Do I tell my dad? Do I tell my mom?
Yeah.
All those things come up.
I can imagine the angst of the young girl going through this and having those things laid out, alleviating that.
Oh,
anxiety.
Yes. They are so thrilled, and it's such a relief, and they have it all put together. And
many pediatricians are very comfortable talking about this topic. It's something that comes up in a pediatrics practice frequently, and certainly in adolescent medicine, these kinds of issues come up. So where can parents turn to get resources? We know the birds and the bees with ease, my first period kit DVD, but where else can parents turn to get good information to help them with these issues?
Well, I always tell them, go to your pediatrician, make sure that your pediatrician has some information for you. I have a couple websites that will be able to help about the birds and the bees. And again, the local hospitals also sometimes have classes like this that are done in their communities.
You talk about teachable moments.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Teachable moments, everyday moments that we can take an opportunity to be able to bring up the topic. I tell the families from the very beginning, when you're bathing your child, when they're 4, 5, 6, this is a good time to review the correct names for the body parts, not all those euphemisms, the correct names for the body parts, and again, body privacy. On top of that, as they continue to grow, you're walking around, you see a mom that's pregnant, use that as a way to, how do you think that happened? As a way to bring up that topic. If you have a pet given birth, use that as a way to realize that this is creation. This is the way we all work. This is the way these amazing bodies procreate. And this happens to adults too. TV is another big one in which I tell the families, please sit down with your children and watch TV with them. See what's happening. Get their information. And always remember to ask them, what do you think? This is not a one-time conversation.
I have to talk to you about this because we chatted about it before the show. I have a 13-year-old, an 8-year-old, and an almost 2-year-old.
Uh-huh.
What the 13-year-old was exposed to when he was a little boy, we controlled every bit of it because we had one child at that point.
Uh-huh.
Now we've got a 13-year-old who wants to watch the shows he wants to watch, and there's an 8-year-old floating around, and there's a 2-year-old glancing at the screen.
Uh-huh.
How does this work in a family? Because you pointed out some very important things earlier.
Yes, the health education, the sexual education of a family is usually dictated by the oldest child in that family.
It's an amazing thought.
So when I was talking to my children, I had 2 girls and a boy. And I would talk to the girls, and this poor boy just got lumped into it too. So he heard and learned a lot about this a lot earlier because that was the path that my family was taking. In your situation, I'm assuming that your 8-year-old is going to learn a lot about it. Also, we as parents are more comfortable, I hope, as we continue to grow with
That's
that older
true.
Child. It makes the younger child's conversation more comfortable.
In a busy family household, mm-hmm. Mom's making dinner, dad's running around, the kids are all doing things, the TV might be on, you may not be paying that close attention. How do we work our world so that we can't always sit down and watch every show with every kid? Mm-hmm. We have online access now. The kids are on the computer doing their homework, mm-hmm. and they click on their internet browser, and a pop-up comes up of sexual issues. How do we control all this?
We can control all of it all the time. We do have to be able to tell the children what our values are. We have to be able to interject when things are out of place and not just sit back and let it happen. I think, again, it's not an easy solution, but we as parents, that's our job as parents, to be able to say to our children that we don't agree with this. This is not right. We would like you to learn this way with our values and our principles.
It's what we signed up for.
So they say, yeah. It didn't come in with an instruction book, but let me tell you, it's the most amazing job we have, that of being parents.
I think it's the most important job, isn't it?
It is. Yes. It is.
So in the 1 minute or so we have left, if you could create the world according to you, mm-hmm. what would you change, or what would you like to see happen in the future along these lines?
I would like parents to be more comfortable initiating this topic at home. You start at an early age, you add your values, you do it with love and affection. You can leave off the table the principles of when you have problems with risks and pleasures, and you start with the basics of how the human body works, and then you slowly add to that foundation as your child continues to grow.
I love it. I think we're going to leave it right there. Thank you so much.
You're
for
very welcome.
Not just joining us, but for all the work that you've been doing trying to educate kids and for making your passion into something that's impacting the world.
Thank you so much for having me.
I've been talking to Dr. Crystal DeFreitas about the birds and the bees with ease, how to talk to your children about the changes in their body and sexual matters to give them a healthy view of all of these issues. It is a parent's job. We have to do it. It's what we signed up for. So the more you know, the better you can do. Once again, knowledge is power. I'm Dr. David Granite, and this has been Health Matters. We'll see you again next time.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.